Penn in Florida is in Miami. We fly out of Miami typically. I have flown out of New York before due to hurricanes and other things that were unexpected where we had to make last-minute changes. But you can see the location. I was able to get to where I had some internet service and able to ping my phone and screenshot it. You can see a little bit closer. Guyana sits to the east of Venezuela in the northern western border. And then in the southern western border, as well as the southern border, it is bordered with Brazil. Where the school is located and where I do my work is down closer to Brazil than it is to Venezuela. The three Guyanas that are there, the first is Guyana, former British Guyana. You've got Suriname in the middle, which is Dutch Guyana. And then the smaller of the three is French Guyana. This is the city of Lethem, which is a border city with Brazil. Bomfim is on the Brazil side of the river there. That is where the school is located, and many of the pictures you're going to see are in this particular area. It's about 335 miles from Georgetown to Lethem, and it takes this time of year. Well, you may not be able to get there because of the rainy season, but this time of year, it's a 20-hour-plus bus ride to go 335 miles. Or you can fly on a plane for an hour and a half to 2 hours and be there. The plane is desirable, but it's small. And it is a single-engine, 12-passenger plane. This is our common mode of transportation from the coast into the interior. You can see that in the interior, this is a photograph from a couple of years ago. They use a ladder, they set it against the wing, they roll out a barrel, and they hand pump the gasoline into the wings of the plane. This is the school, the upper left photograph where the banab or the shelter is. Behind it are the classrooms or the apartments for the instructors. Down below on the left, you can see the school extending out from the apartments for the instructors. You can see a breezeway towards the back, and then the medical clinic is on the rear. Over to the right, and this is the orientation that you would see these properties, is the preacher house connected with the church building, and then behind it you see the church building extending to the rear. This just some views around the property there. This the lower right is the medical clinic. This is the classroom as it currently is situated. It was much smaller when I first began going. We've enlarged it. This is the apartment I normally stay in when I go. Very nice accommodations. This is the medical clinic when it was first completed. It's much busier now than it was then as far as the number of items that are present. There's a breezeway for people to sit in out of the sun while they're waiting to go into the clinic. We've got two examination rooms, a bathroom inside, and we keep all of our supplies located there as well. Lethem is where Guyana Christian University is. We do a lot of our teaching and our preaching there. As I mentioned, I've been going since 2008. This is the first batch of students. They began in 2007. I was asked to join and become an adjunct faculty member. And it took about a year to get the finances and to get my schedule cleared to where I could go. And these are the first folks that I met when I was there. The one in the red is Thomas George. He's the dean or director of the school. He is Makushi Indian tribe. And in that particular class, if I'm not mistaken, there were three different Indian tribes represented among the enrollment. 2009, 10, you can see how much smaller the classroom was back in the day. It's our second batch of students here, teaching them their second year. Third batch, had a smaller batch on this occasion, and the brother all the way to the right Clifton Lorendo, his grandson, was in the day school next door to the property, and he had gotten out of school, and he wanted to be in the picture that day. And we were very happy for him to be in the picture. Graduation of that class in 2014, I've been able to be blessed to attend a couple of the graduations for the students, but not all of them, and there's a graduation taking place in a couple of weeks that I'm not going to be able to be a part of, but just very happy to have been able to be there for a few of those. Fourth batch of students, the brother in the green shirt there, if you look at the tallest of the brothers, the one who's standing just to my left shoulder, that's Derek Winter. This is Leon Henry from Karardar. Derek is from Ishalton Village, and Karardar is a village nearby but not adjacent to, and he helped, along with some others, to establish the church in that village, and he recruited Leon to be in the school. That'll have some significance later. There they are in 2016 as they're preparing to finish their studies. And you'll notice the absence of Leon in that picture. New batch of students, number 5, coming in 2017. The brother in the wheelchair was in the Guyanese Defense Force. He was not a Christian. His roommate came in intoxicated one night into their barracks and became belligerent and stabbed him in the back and severed his spinal cord. He went through very difficult times, a lot of pain, alcoholism, drug abuse, as well as other things, and he was about to commit suicide when there was a campaign that came to town, and some of you may recognize this name. Tom Holland was there on a campaign, and he went to go hear Brother Tom Holland. And he obeyed the gospel. This is after their graduation. Was able to be there for their graduation. And I always try to take them gifts when they're close to graduation. And having a good study Bible and some other things is always very important for the students. This is the current group of students. And you'll notice Johnny Cash down there in the front right. That's Leon Henry again. Next to him is his son, Reuben. This current batch should have been out of school already, but because of COVID, they missed an entire year, and they are preparing to graduate now. And this is the group of students. When I was there the end of February, 1st of March, prior to moving here. The blue dot is Lethem. The arrow is pointed to a village called Napi. It's about 25 or so miles away from Lethem. It takes about an hour to get there by motor vehicle. It's a village that I've been to quite a few times. I've spoken there. You can see the crowd that was there on this particular Sunday. It included the Christians from a neighboring village, Parashara. They loaded 30 people in a 12-passenger van and came over. We slept in the tents. The brethren that went with me and provided my transportation, we all slept in tents outside. The church building's down there to the lower. But the preacher there is a student from my second class of students. His daughter was the first female student in the school. Her name is Shireen, and she was going to be going up to do some medical training in Georgetown, and before she would go, she wanted to make sure she had a good, strong Bible education, and she supported herself through school for 2 years. These are some of the groups of people that have gone down that I've been a part of. The upper left is from 2013. The one on the right is 2014, and you kind of got a meeting of the minds down here below. The three of us are planning our worship services in the evening and how we're going to go about doing things. I'm the one on the left. Across from me is Bryant Evans. Bryant Evans is the president of the school. He He is the preacher at the Eastern Shore Church of Christ in Daphne, Alabama, which sits on the eastern bank of Mobile Bay. The brother with his back to us that is also on the right end of both of the other pictures is Roger Comstock. Roger Comstock's done some work on Gospel Broadcasting Network and also is the current preacher at the Gatlinburg Church of Christ. And he is president of Amerindian Missions. Amerindian Missions was started by the brother in the middle, Jerry Davidson. He began going 30-plus years ago, 40 years ago maybe at this point. I don't remember. I've lost track. Brother Davidson got Parkinson's disease and was not able to continue with the campaigns. And he asked Brother Comstock, and Brother Comstock agreed after some time to take that over. Brother Davidson passed away during our COVID year last year. He was 77 years old and had made, I want to say, close to 100 trips to Guyana. This is one of our campaigns in Yupikari. One of the shortcomings that we've had traditionally is ladies to teach children and other ladies. This young lady went on several trips with us and did an outstanding job. This is in 2013 when a tractor showed up with a trailer, and you see the size of the trailer that had over 30 people on it. They had traveled over 3 hours from Anai Village to come to be a part of the campaign. And this is when they showed up and everyone is greeting. I know all the people in that picture, but I'm not going to go through and try to name them all for you right now. We had over 150 people the last night of the meeting. We had so many people, and you can't really see it, but in the lower left picture, all the way to the left, where you see the table, above it, there's a water bottle, and on top of the water bottle, there is a broken bench that is sitting in the front of that section of people. The bench broke. We had so many people on it. There were people standing outside, and there were people down the sides listening through the split block. On that particular campaign, we had several baptisms. I make it my habit not to go there for the purpose of baptizing, but on occasion I have baptized. I prefer that the locals do it because I don't want, it's kind of like Paul in 1 Corinthians. We don't want anybody thinking they're special or whatever because brother so-and-so did this or that or the other. But we want the ones who are going to be there to follow up with them to be a part of it. But on occasion, depending on who they are, I will involve myself. That's Brother Jeremiah on the left. I don't remember the young lady's name on the right. This river right here in Yupikari is where the baptisms are done. It's about 10 minutes from the church building. And there's a sandbar that goes out, and then you have to step off the sandbar in order to get into water deep enough to baptize. And it's a pretty good step off, as you can see, down to almost chest high on the two baptismal candidates there. In the green is Elroy McGarrell from the second class of students. He's the preacher there in Yupikari. That night after that last service, we had one more baptism, and this young lady had been studied with by Clifton Lorindo, the one whose grandson had to be in the picture. He's also from Yupikari Village, and he'd been studying with her, and I did some studying with her as well, and I decided to do her baptism. He was not wanting to get into the water that night, and for reasons that will become apparent in just a moment. You see the eye shine over my shoulder? That's a caiman. That's a South American alligator. And you saw how wide the river was. It's sitting out there about 30 yards from where we are. And Brother Elroy has my flashlight. And I told him, I said, you watch the caiman. And if they start coming our way, you let me know. And I'm going to grab her by her shorts and throw her back up on the bank. And I'll get out as fast as I can. We went down. I took her confession right here. before we ever got in the water. We stepped off into the water. I baptized her. We came back out very quickly, as you can see us coming out right there. And the caiman stayed right where they were. God is good. Sometimes we run across things that are, most of them are surprises while we're there. Sister Mary was a member of the church there in Lethem, Culver City, and her mother was burning some brush. The wind blew up and it burned her house down. It was a mud brick house. It burned up some of her fruit trees, as you can see. She didn't have much to begin with. You can see on the lower left, that's her shower area and where she washes clothes. The toilet area is out behind that. Over here in the upper right, that's her kitchen, the little brick area where she builds her fires. But during the time when the fire took her house, she was actually had saved up money to build a house. And you can see on the right there, she had the walls up. Well, it was only a month or so before rainy season was going to set in. And I'd been given some extra money for the trip. And so I put together a group of guys from the school, and along with Amit Prasad, who was a contractor, you'll see him in quite a few of the pictures, and I'm hopeful that he and his wife are online with us right now. I'm a former contractor, so we used them for legwork down below, and he and I made sure that there was a roof on this house. On another occasion, this is Susie's first trip, as you can see her enjoying the shade when it was about 110 degrees. We got there, and three of the motorbikes were disabled at the school, and so the students did not have transportation to the villages to go preach and teach on the weekends. There was only one bike available. The blue one had been in an accident. The others, it was mechanical. Well, prior to leaving, a school teacher in Kentucky handed me $1,500 and said, do what you need to do with this. We put three motorbikes back together so that they could start back. That's the dean or director of the school that is doing the work while I'm teaching class. Transportation down there is not easy to the remote areas. This is not during the rainy season. And you can see roads are washed out. You still have river crossings. You've got rock ledges you have to go over, roads that are kind of rough. But all of those things don't mean anything. This is about people. This is about establishing relationships with people over a long period of time. You remember me telling you about Derek Winter, who helped establish the church in Corardar. When we went to Ishelton in 2013 to take some benevolence down there one weekend and for me to be able to teach and preach, he invited me to his house. And I asked him if I could take pictures inside of his house, and he said, of course. They have a mentally retarded grandchild that they were taking care of, he and his wife. If you go out into the foyer when we're done, some of you may have seen it on the way in, there's a small table in front of the visitor booth. On it, there is a pocketbook, a lady's pocketbook that is made from a palm frond, actually stitched together. This sister made that, gave it to me, and said, please take this to your wife. That was made in 2013. Brother Derek was a special, special guy. That's his house down below. You can see they've got the cooking and eating area, and then they have the living area out to the side. This is Elroy McGarrell. I've known Elroy since 2008. The picture on the right is 2010 at the school. The picture down below is him keeping the caiman away while I'm baptizing this young lady. The picture of the upper right was taken 2 weeks ago. And we're going down the road in the rain, and a motorcycle goes by, and we stop, and it's Elroy and Thelma. And we stop, and we spend some time and visit with them. I have a special connection with him. He's had his own struggles, some of his own doing, some of not his own doing. But he continues to serve, and just so grateful for his abilities and for his heart. This is Amit Eileen Prasad on the right. He's the one that helped me put the roof on. He does a lot of driving for us. He is my contact in the interior. This is their son, Amit Jr. This is back in 2013. A few months after this picture was taken, they lost their son. It was devastating. Two very strong workers in the church. Over here on the right is Derek at his graduation. About 6 months after he graduated, he died in a motorcycle crash. The blue motorcycle that Thomas was working on that I mentioned to you had been in a crash. Because of Derek's death, Leon became very discouraged and left the school. And that's why he's back in this class. A couple of years later, Amit Eileen had a baby girl. The picture on the right was just taken here just a few months ago. God blessed them in their grief to bring them another child. And a healthy girl she is, very smart, a great blessing to that family. But they still, as those who have lost children understand, it's not something I can understand like that, but you know that how that grief stays with you. And it's still a struggle for them. But they continue to be faithful and continue to move forward in the kingdom work. Down at the bottom left, you see Leon. This was taken back a couple of months ago when I was there in March. Sweet, sweet man. I'm standing there getting my picture made with all the students, and as the picture was about to be taken, he reaches out and he hugs me with both hands. Lower right is him and his son. They're both in school now. But the one in white there, that's Derek Winter's son. He's a student in the school about to graduate. Out of Derek's death came a congregation and came his son's interest in the school, discouragement, and then being encouraged once again. And Brother Leon, at his own expense and in his own time, has been working on building a meeting house for the church there that's meeting in someone's house currently. But they're going to have their own property and a safe place to meet here very soon. I mentioned to you about Elroy McGarrell, whom I've known for a long time. I went to his home place in 2010 and met this sweet man that's sitting in front of you, who was the first fruits of the village of Napi. He has dwarfism. And he survived to adulthood in that environment, long enough to obey the gospel. He is the uncle of the girl that's standing behind him. Her name is Linda. Linda has a black eye. And I was very concerned about Linda when I got there. And so I took Elroy aside and I asked him, I said, what's going on? She was about 15 or 16 at the time. And I said, is somebody abusing your sister? And he goes, oh, no, it's nothing like that. She has seizures. And I said, how long has she had seizures? He said, since she was 6 months old when she had malaria. And she'd have grandma seizures once a week, twice a month. Never knew when they were going to happen. And that one had happened while she was at school a few days before we got there, and she fell on her face and busted her face up pretty good. Beautiful young lady. When I went back and reported on that, a doctor in my congregation in Kentucky where I was preaching at the time, John Adams, that is him, in 2011 agreed to go with me. And that is the genesis of our medical clinic because of this young lady. He brought a 2-year supply of seizure medicine for her so that she would be able to have a more normal life because she didn't have access to something so basic that could help her. And her seizures were very well controlled because he offered to go. Lower right, she was just married prior to this picture in 2013, to her brother's classmate at the preaching school. That's Kennard in the blue shirt. 2014 is them the next year when I ran into them once again. The picture with Kennard up above was taken 2 weeks ago. This girl who had seizures that nobody wanted to be around was able to find a beautiful Christian husband. And they have this beautiful 7-year-old boy. And she's expecting another child now. You often wonder if you make a difference. And sometimes ministry is very difficult. Sometimes mission work, you go, you build a house, you go home. And you never really see the fruit of your labor. All of my labor's been in the same region for 13 years. And I've been blessed by God to see that we can make a difference. That picture was just taken 2 weeks ago. Like I said, I had a hard time fitting 13 years in. Now to our trip that we just took. Down in the upper part of Region 9, where the rainforest begins to connect to the savanna region, is a large area called Anai, and you can see it there kind of towards the middle of the exploded view. Around it are many smaller villages. It's a well-populated area. We get a number of our students for the school there. A number of the preachers there are former students of mine. It is a place where this year we went for our second medical campaign. We would do clinic during the day. We would do gospel meeting in the evening. We arrived by truck because Angie Sunday, she's the main nurse, and I would be remiss. You'll see her in just a few moments. But I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that none of this could happen if it wasn't for her. She's the backbone of the medical work there. She goes with me when we're not doing medical missions and works in the clinic and works with the students and with the students' families. She inventories. She does all of those things to make sure that that clinic functions and is available for us. So we went down 2 days early, packed up the clinic, made sure that she had everything that she knew that we needed, and then we drove about 4 hours up to Anai, which is 75 miles from Lethem. It took about 4 hours to get there because of the road conditions. The bus with the luggage and everything behind it is the luggage for my team. Sunil Joseph and his wife loaded everything up in a bus and drove 20 hours through the night to get the luggage there where we didn't have to pay extra freight on the plane. The team overnighted in Georgetown, and this is them arriving at a landing strip there in Anai, where I had to charter a plane to bring them in. This is them checking in up in the Georgetown area. It's basically a warehouse with scales and people there to check you out to make sure that everybody can fly safely. You can see Beth Jones over here from Idaho getting her temperature checked in the age of COVID. Mask, temperature checks, and all those things. COVID testing is all necessary. We have to test before we go, and then we have to test in order to come back to the United States. You have to weigh with all of your possessions that are going on the plane, and I've actually been in a remote area where we made a landing where they were out there with a calculator and had to bleed fuel off the plane in order for us to get airborne in the length of time that we had to get up in the air on the runway. This is them boarding the plane. You can see Dr. John here in the turquoise with his hand on Bridget's back, I guess reassuring her about the plane. I'm not sure what's going on there. Bridget was our youngest member, 16 years old. Talk about her here in a few minutes as well. This is them arriving in the Anai area. That's Sunil Joseph in the blue down at the bottom right and also up there hugging Amit. This is his wife, Jessica George, down below. Jessica is the daughter of the director of the school. She's Makushi Indian. Sunil Joseph is East Indian from up in the coastal area. He owns a bus service. He takes care of all of our transportation and safety in Georgetown, makes all the arrangements for us, our hotels, our plane tickets, secures medication for us in Georgetown, and we hire his buses to help move us around. And he and his wife drove all of the medical supplies in that had been brought from the States, as well as the extra luggage. Here's my team. This team came from six different states. The states of Washington, Idaho, Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, and Florida were represented on this team. The only three on this team that have made every one of these medical team trips are Dr. John Adams, Sister Angie Sunday, an RN, and good brother and elder in the church, Chris Bartlett from Puyallup, Washington. This is Dr. John. He's from Franklin, Kentucky. He was born in Massachusetts but grew up in West Virginia, went to Marshall. And he was so excited while we were down there, he was able to get internet connection to find out that the Marshall's men's soccer team won the national championship. And so that everything else was going to be gravy for him after that. Such a super, super guy. He has over 20 mission trips under his belt to Africa, to the Ukraine, to Central America. And this was his fourth trip. I'm losing track. I apologize. He's in his early 50s. He also is on faculty at a couple of medical schools, and he has paid the way for two different medical students to go on these trips with us from his own pocket. There's one of his medical students that he brought this time. She just graduated from medical school 2 weeks before this trip. Holly is from Louisville, Kentucky. And as you can see, for those of you who've been in medical school, that middle picture probably reminds you of a few days that you had. She worked really hard, and when she got a break, she took advantage of it, whether it was 10 minutes or however long it was. Super, super young lady. She got her degree in OD, so she is hoping to go into sports medicine. So she was our go-to whenever we had joint and other types of difficulties, bone issues that folks were having, and we had quite a few. This is Cecil and Kim Derryberry in the middle. Cecil's my first cousin. He'd never been on a mission trip before. When I was leaving in 2018 to go to Guyana, a day before I was scheduled to leave, his wife died at 60 years of age. I rearranged my flight schedule and I flew to Nashville, Tennessee, so I could be with him before I left. His father and my mother, brother and sister, and they died 1 year apart here just a year or two ago. And when I returned from Guyana in 2019 from our second medical campaign, our first large medical campaign, he was dating this nurse practitioner named Kim. And they had fallen head over heels in love with each other. And I was privileged in October to tie the knot for them. And they made this trip with us. and she was one of our care providers. Cecil took care of our personal hygiene kits, making sure that all of our folks who came through the clinic, every individual got a kit with toothpaste, toothbrush, soap, shampoo. They got a Bible bookmark and an invitation to the gospel meeting that evening. Cecil took care of all of that. At one point, he took all of the items that a lady that had a couple of children and had some prescriptions from the pharmacy, and he put them all in one bag. He says, here, this will make it easier for you to carry. And she thanked him and walked out the door, and she came back. She goes, I wish I could put you in that bag and take you home with me. Well, when he got over the embarrassment, shock, laughter, etc., he came straight for Kim and told her, and she absolutely thought that was hilarious. She is an excellent care provider, and she works at a clinic in Middle Tennessee, so she sees patients that she knows and occasionally some folks who walk in the door, so she was very well suited for folks walking in that had problems that she had no idea what was going on. Those are our three care providers on this trip. This is Amanda McFarlane, one of our nurses. I met Amanda at Passport Health in Tacoma, Washington. When I went to go get, I think it was a yellow fever booster. And she was the first nurse at Passport Health to ever show any interest in the work. And she was so excited to hear about it. This was her second trip that she made. She just lost her dad a couple of months ago, and so I'm sure this proved to be a very cathartic experience for her to take her mind off of her grief. They're getting ready to do his service coming up here in the next week or so. This is Angie Sunday, and Angie doesn't like cameras, can you tell? I walk over to take her picture, and she turns her head. She does that a lot. You've got to catch her when she's not expecting it. She has made, I think, 6 or 7 trips now to Guyana. She lost her husband when I was preaching in Gulf Shores, Alabama, where she was a member. He was just short of his 47th birthday and died of brain aneurysm. He owned the ambulance service. He brought 911 to the county. Just a very active person in people's health and well-being. She struggled, as those who have lost spouses understand. She struggled for quite a while to kind of find her place and her purpose. She supported my work for a long time. And then she fell in love with the people of Guyana through me. And then she went and visited, and she didn't love them because of me anymore. She's a big part of that work. This is Beth Jones. This is her first mission trip. Beth is from Meridian, Idaho. She worked in Washington, where she and her husband lived for a long time in Olympia. And her daughter is one of our members in Puyallup. And when they would come to visit grandkids, and her daughter would also be there. You grandparents understand that, I'm sure. She heard about the medical work we were doing. And she goes, I always wanted to make a medical trip, but I never was able to. And I'm retired now. And I said, well, what's stopping you now? And she wanted to make this trip so badly that she came out of retirement last year and was working in a doctor's office to keep her skills up so she could go on this trip. She's in her late 60s, and she was a dynamo. She's a very shy person, but she was amazing in the triage when she was working with the patients. She made several house calls for us with the doctors. I could only spare one doctor and one nurse to do house calls when we had particular situations because we need to keep the clinic moving along. And she was selected a couple of times to make those house calls. But because she had not been to Guyana before, I wanted her to see some of the living conditions and see how people survive there. Chris Bartlett, he's an elder in the church in Puyallup. Chris has made 4 trips, I believe, now. Chris is retired from the Army Medical Corps and then worked in a Catholic hospital in Tacoma for, I think, 19 years in their imaging department. He's a Desert Storm vet, and he runs our pharmacy for us. Chris works exceptionally hard. He makes sure that our folks get their medicine. If you've ever done any medical missions, you know that that's usually the bottleneck. That's usually what holds everybody up. But we got him some extra help this year, and they move things along greatly. He does a special, special job for us, and he, like everybody else, has fallen in love with the Guyanese people, and he hopes to continue making these trips for quite some time. These are the Niswongers. That's Jeff up there at the top left. He's a lieutenant in the Tacoma Fire Department and a fire medic. That's his oldest child, Trent, who is 20 years old and is already a certified aircraft mechanic. And he's getting his pilot's license and working on that because he wants to fly in the mission field. He is the oldest of six current children, and they're expecting their seventh. Bridget, down below, turned 16 back in April. A couple of years ago, they were homeschooled. Her civics or history or geography or one of her classes, she had a blank book that she was required to write a book, in essence, on a country. She chose Guyana because of my mission work. And I started getting text messages, lots of them. And I was feeding information to her. She's sending pictures to me. Do you know what this is? Have you ever seen this before? Back and forth. And she ended up writing this book. And she was going to go last year when our trip got canceled. And she was able to go this year for her first time and fall in love for real with the country that that she loved from a distance. I'm very hopeful it won't be her last trip. They all helped in the pharmacy. This is Ricky Hagan. Ricky Hagan is a 40-year retired colonel in the United States Army. He started as a private, combat veteran in Iraq, multiple tours. He's seen the worst of humanity. And he's a softie. Can you tell? He's hard on everybody on the outside, but on the inside, he's just, he's goo when it comes to kids. He took care of our reading glasses for us, and he kept all of us in stitches in the clinic, because when people would walk up to him, he was like, "Hey, when did you get here?" He's from Kentucky, by the way. "When did you get here? I've been waiting for you. How long's it been?" You know, and they didn't know who he was. A 70-year-old Amerindian woman walked up to him and he goes, "Hey, I've been waiting for you. You still single?" And he got up and he hugged her, and I mean, she's laughing at him, and there was one standing behind her, and he goes, "Oh, two of you. Are you still single too?" Puts his arm around both of them. "Come over here. Let me show you guys some glasses." Just a riot. You'll notice a thing of Tabasco sauce there. He drinks that during the day. He showed me a picture while we were there of him in Saddam's palace when they captured the palace. And he's in the floor leaning back on his backpack, and he's got a bottle of Tabasco sauce sitting next to him. This is a long time thing that he does. This is Brian Hall. Brian Hall started going a few years back, and he is a supporter of the work. He helps to garner support in congregations around the United States, particularly in West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee. He raises support. He raises materials, Bibles, Bible school material, other types of things, songbooks. And he's an amateur magician, as you can see down at the bottom left. Brian spent most of his time with the folks who were waiting long hours in the heat and doing tricks for them. And then he would convert his trick into a Bible story. And he would say, "You know, we've got this, but..." And then he would tell them a Bible study. He's a big goofball, just a big kid, a great guy, loves the Lord. He serves as an elder in the church in Kentucky. And there's a picture of him at the airport in Ogle, up right outside of Georgetown. And he had the picture made with the sign, and he put a caption of it. He says, I'm not going into that restricted area because I'm not authorized. And he says, there's a biblical principle there. Something to think about. This is the team arriving at the church building in Quattamong for our two-day clinic. When we arrived, the members had already carried the benches out and put them under the banab outside and left tables and a few benches for us inside to use and had cleared it out before we ever got there. And so we set about having to sort through vitamins and other things that were last-minute add-ons to the team. You can see I'm over there aggravating Angie about where we're going to do what. She has her ideas and I have mine, and she wins. It's like the brother who said that the secret to his long marriage was he always got the last word. Yes, dear. And so when it comes to the clinic, I always get the last word, and it always ends up being yes, dear. So she gets her way in the clinic. We had these personal hygiene kits. We took 600 of them with us because that's all we could carry. The Puyallup Church, and I'm getting ready to talk about some folks here. Last year, when we were getting ready to make this trip, we wanted to do these personal hygiene kits. And I said, we need toothbrushes, toothpaste, soap, and shampoo. How much do you need? Well, we probably need 500 or 600 because that's how many people we're going to see. I got 1,700 toothbrushes. I got over 1,000 tubes of toothpaste in a week. I got over 500 pair of reading glasses, all donated from people's pockets. Very generous congregation, very supportive congregation. You can see the eyeglasses there, and we use songbooks and Bibles to test the power of the glasses because we don't have any equipment to do it otherwise. And they would try a power until they found the power that worked best for them. And they would come back that night to the gospel meeting, and they'd still have the sticker that said 1.25 on their glasses. Right before Angie and I went in February to kind of figure out what we were going to do, you can see Angie all the way over to the left. We had to pack up all those kits. And I asked for help from the church and thought we were going to get about 5 or 6 people. And we had 25 people show up on a Thursday morning to pack personal hygiene kits. Some of those people can't afford to give any money to Guyana. And they'll never be able to go. But as I read, their fellow workers in Guyana, because of the efforts that they have made in doing what they can with what they've got to reach the people and to help the people of Guyana. This young lady in the flannel shirt right here, that's Bridget Neiswanger. And she's helping to pack up some stuff for her trip to Guyana. That's her sister beside her with the knit cap on. Her sister made our last medical trip with us. So the first day of clinic, here we are. We're set up, and final instructions I'm giving to the crew. I don't usually tell the doctors and nurses what to do. I'm not a doctor, and I didn't go to medical school, and I don't play one on TV. So they do their thing. I set them up and make it possible for them to do their work. With the rest of the folks, I was making sure that we had all the bases covered there. And the people started coming. And because of the road conditions and other conditions, a lot of people weren't able to make it on their own. And so I hired our truck and our van to go to the surrounding villages to collect people and bring them back and then take them back so that they could come to the clinic. And then we did the same thing in the nights. We would go shuttle people back and forth to the time that we had in our gospel meetings. Here's some of our folks working in the clinic as we were first getting started. You see how busy they are in the pharmacy. That's Walford Donald in the green shirt, upper left. That's Angie working on this man's leg, or assessing his leg, I should say. Brother Walford is in the second batch of students. He's the preacher there in Quatamong, and he's having to interpret with some of the older Amerindians. Even though English is the national language, some of the olders only went through school to second and third grade. And English was always their second language, even though that's what they have to speak in school. So he was needed to translate and help Angie, as well as the other nurses and doctors, when one of the older, this is Makushi territory here, so most of the folks that we saw were Makushi. When they would come in and the language was a barrier. But for the most part, that's one of the beautiful things about Guyana is 98% of the time, communication is not an issue. And you don't have to have anybody special to do the communication. You can see we got very busy very quickly with some of our patients because of temperatures. We would do temp checks outside. We would see them outside so we didn't bring them into the clinic in case we were dealing with COVID or another contagion. We saw all kinds of things, some of them very difficult. The lady in the pink there who's holding the baby belongs to the man sitting in front of her. He has an infected toe. It's all the way into the bone. And he's going to lose the toe. He's not even 30 years old. He's going to lose the toe, and John is here telling him if he doesn't go and have that toe removed, he's going to lose his foot. He shot him 3 days in a row with Rocephrin, and as he said, I'm just going to shoot a cannon at it just to see if we can knock it out, but he says, you know, all it's going to do is just clear it up for a short time, but he's going to have it taken off. Here we're doing a procedure to remove a piece of embedded glass out of this young lady's foot. The lighting outside was better than the lighting inside. We caught a break from the rain, and so the pickup truck became an operating room. Here Jeff is serving as his nurse because I couldn't spare a nurse, so I pulled him out of the pharmacy and sent him out there to help John. He's deadening her foot. He was able to cut into her foot right beneath her second toe, about 3/4 inch below the joint, cut into the ball of her foot, remove the glass, and it didn't even require a stitch. As I mentioned, our road conditions were deplorable. This year, the rain never truly stopped. They didn't have a full dry season, which normally goes for 8 or 9 months. It had been raining off and on, and the month prior to us getting there had begun raining more regularly. So travel was very labored. The conditions were deplorable. That's Walford Donald on the upper right, bringing a message one night. I spoke every night, and a couple of the local preachers would tag team with me. That's Brother Walford's brother over there. And Wendell is his name, and a great song leader, infectious song leading, big smile on his face all the time, had just some very special evenings, overflow crowds, over 100 every night. I had to bring more benches out and put them outside of the Banab. I have lights and string lights and drop cords and things that I take for our nighttime events and just ask the locals if they can provide a generator. And so we're able to have lighting. But the bad thing about rainy season and outdoor lights in the evening, insects. But we had great participation. Had three ladies came forward the last night asking for prayer. confession of sin with one of them. The other, we're just needing some strength. We know how that is, don't we? We need that all the time. Afterwards, the people would stand around and enjoy the fellowship. And I had to not yell at the team, but strongly encourage the team every night, because our dinner would be waiting for us. And they would want to stay and talk just a little bit longer, a little bit longer, a little bit longer. And I would let them stay as long as I could. And then it wasn't about the dinner. It was about the people that were serving our dinner that were going to be 11 o'clock at night getting home in the dark. And so we began driving them home at night. One night we had so many people we had to take back to another village that there wasn't room for the team. And we had both the vehicles full. And so a couple of us had to get up on the roof. That's Dr. John in the back, Jeff and his son Trent, and I'm up there in the front. How many of you have seen Young Frankenstein, the movie? A lot of you have. When they're digging up the body, you know, that they're going to use, Marty Feldman, who's Igor in the movie, turns and says, you know, it could be worse. It could be raining. Jeff quoted that line about 4 minutes after we left the church building, and guess what it did? Buckets of rain. And then our driver forgot on a couple of occasions that we were up there, and he drove us under some trees. And so we're having to duck trees. We're getting soaked. We all managed to hang on. And so our e-ticket at Disney World came in handy. Here we're having to pack things up for a long trip heading south. We were supposed to go to Yupikari and do another two-day clinic, but there's a bridge that was burned when we were there previously. The bridge had not been repaired, and the diversion down off of the raised roadway was in water, and there was no way for us to get to the village. So we, about a week or two before we went down there, we arranged to do in a smaller village near Lethem. And you can see the road conditions as we're trying to make our way back. It's normally a 2.5 hour ride for the 75 miles, and it's close to 4 hours under these conditions. To go into Lethem, the main city, we had to go through a checkpoint, get our temperatures checked and our names recorded. That's what we're doing here. This was not an uncommon thing in the age of COVID. These are some of the residents of Lethem, and I wanted to take their picture, but they were a little sheepish. That's actually downtown Lethem. And anybody that's been into some of the third world countries around the world, you know how common that can be. This is Moko Moko Village. This was about 30, 45 minutes away from where we were in Lethem. Converting a church building into a clinic again. It's all about the people. Doing blood checks. Diabetes is a big deal down there. This is Dr. John with an airplane, a model airplane he's giving to this young boy. Washing out ears. Had to go outside to do that, where there was better light. And you can see Amanda's doing this, and you can see this girl's friend or sister's over there, and she's showing her through the scope so she can see for herself. This is Bible study Wednesday night, and then we did an extension and gospel meeting on Thursday night after the clinic. Again, it was a one-day clinic. Great participation both nights. We did 3 full days of clinic. We saw over 350 people in 3 days. Hypertension, diabetes, worms is big down there. Stomach, gallbladder issues, bacterial and fungal skin infections, eye issues, parasitic infections and cataracts. We saw more cataracts this time than we've ever seen. Something so simple that we could take care of here and the people are going blind. Scabies was very prominent in Moka Moka Village. Fungal ear infections, impactions, fluid, allergies. Dehydration is a huge problem there. They do not drink enough water, and that contributes to the chronic issues that they have. We saw more cancer this time than we've seen. It seems like, I don't think all of them, but most of them went with Angie. Angie's had melanoma. And so she's very particular about her own, but when she sees someone else, she's very particular about them. And one man's entire nose was covered. And then there were several tumors under the skin, on the neck, and on the face. And no real prospects for anything to help them. Those are the kind of things you just got to step outside and cry for a minute. Come back in. We had 6 worship services while we were there and had over 400 people in attendance at those 6 events. Over 50 first-time visitors. 5 responses for prayer between the services that we had, and many new Bible studies were and contacts were made through those first-time visitors. As a result of having the clinic, we were able to bring them to the church property and introduce them to the churches of Christ in Region 9. When it comes to our needs, they're many. Prayers, of course, are always needed for God's blessing on everything that we do down there. Because if it's not for His glory, it's going to fail. And we need His blessing to be able to keep our own perspective proper as we go through and do the work that we've got to do. Inexpensive means of acquiring prescription medicines. Medical supplies are needed. Financial support for shipping, for local needs, etc. On this trip, not only did the congregation here help, but several members also helped, and we were able to take care of quite a few local needs as a result of an amazing generosity from people that just met me. And I'm overwhelmed with the love and support that we received. We need doctors. We need PAs and nurse practitioners. We need nurses of all categories. In order for us to expand and reach more villages, we need more teams. And currently, right now, I have enough for 2 teams, but not everybody can go every year. So right now, we're rotating people through and doing one large push and reaching to 2 villages every year with my teams. There's another team that goes to the south of Lethem down in the Wapshana villages, and it's a smaller team. But one of my long-term hopes is that with the medical school here and access to medical students, we would be able to build up our inventory of doctors and nurses to help out. We need dentists. They always ask for dentists. I'll tell you a story about Elroy. Elroy lives 2.5 hours from Lethem. Lethem is the only place with any kind of decent hospital. And by our standards, it's not much of a hospital. It's more like a small clinic. And there's a dentist that comes in 1 or 2 days a week. He had an abscessed tooth. And he left his village. He went down. The dentist wasn't there on the day he was supposed to be there. He waited another day. The dentist still didn't come, and he had to return back to his village with an abscessed tooth. But we need dentists. We need eye doctors. desperately. There's so many eye issues with people that live within 10 or 15 degrees of the equator because of their constant exposure to the sun. And if somebody knows something that I don't know, we need a way to deal with cataracts in the third world. These people are going blind and there's no reason for it. And we need helpers. If you noticed, half my team was medical, the rest of, or just under half, everybody else was helping, assisting. And those helpers are critical because every helper that is working makes the doctors and nurses focus purely medical. They don't have to do any busy work at all. They get to be doctors. They get to be nurses. They get to see patients. They don't have to do paperwork. They don't have to fill scripts. They don't have to do anything. All they have to do is see patients. And the helpers are the ones that make it happen. And so I need helpers. So anybody that has an interest in going, I would love to talk to you. Or if you know how any of these needs can be met, I appreciate it. A tearful goodbye in Georgetown. Hugs all around. I weep every time I leave because I know there's so much that's left undone. The relationships that are built by continuing to go to the same place all the time. Different villages. There's in the interior, there's 40 some odd villages down there, but and I've been to probably half of the villages there, but almost all of the preachers in Region 9 I've taught in school and have developed relationships with them, and through them developed relationships with their families and with their church members. It's about the people. Millions are groping without the gospel. And it's about relationships that span a long period of time. The picture on the left is from 2008. The picture on the right is from 2015. Noel Anthony went and was preaching while he was in school on the weekends. And he would walk 8 miles to a neighboring village to do Bible studies. And six people wanted to obey the gospel. And they walked 4 miles to find water so he could baptize them into Christ. Charles Simon was in the first batch of students also. Met him in 2008. This is a picture of him in 2014 or 2015. He had just recovered from a motorcycle crash where he broke his leg and had to go to Brazil for surgery because someone was bitten by a rattlesnake and he was rushing him to the hospital. And crashed his bike on the way. The man survived the snake bite. Charles has a very pronounced limp now, but he was just elected tushaws of his village. That's the village chief or mayor. He's a gospel preacher, and he's now the tushaw of his village. Philip Dunking was a member of the communist government there. He was actually an aide to the president of the country until one of our campaigns went to Eichelton, and he obeyed the gospel and became a great ambassador for the church, taking care of a lot of things for us. He had a massive stroke this last year, and it was 7 days before they could get him to Georgetown to where they could do anything for him. And, of course, after 7 days, they couldn't do anything for him. And he's still alive, but he's basically existing at this point. A wonderful, wonderful servant of God. All right, if I told you he ain't nothing but a hound dog, you want to guess what his first name is? His name is Elvis. And when I met him in 2008 and he introduced himself, I said, "You ain't nothing but a hound dog." And he looked at me like I had three heads. And I said, your mom must have been an Elvis Presley fan. And he goes, I don't know what that means. This is me with him a couple years ago. His son is about to graduate from the school now. I've known him for a long, long time. This is Joseph Adventura. I told you about him and his mishap that he had where he was stabbed in the back. This was after teaching him. This is a couple of years later on the right over in Brazil. I went over there to go preach, and he was there preaching and teaching in this small. That church building will hold 40 people. I know because I was there. And it's tight and it's hot. But they love the Lord. And he was there. And he doesn't speak Portuguese, but he's learning Portuguese so he can teach them in their own language. They know enough English to where he can use English. And they knew enough English that I was able to preach and make sure that I spoke very slowly so they could keep up with me. I mentioned Brother Elroy earlier. This is Archer Moses. Archer was one of the people that was on the tractor that drove over 3 hours over rough roads to come to that gospel meeting. He is the top performing student ever in our school. He will probably be teaching in that school very soon. He now preaches in the village of Katoka, which is a village of about 800 where we did a medical campaign 2 years ago, 2019. I was privileged to do a gospel meeting side by side with him while we saw over 250 people in a village of 800 in 2 days. He's an amazing servant of God. Thomas George, the director of the school. That's when we met in 2008. He's the first person I met in the interior. I traveled by myself for my first trip to go teach. Didn't know a soul. He meets me at the airport. And we struck up a friendship and a relationship that has lasted for many, many years. You can see the picture on the right there that we haven't aged a bit since we first met. The two pictures below, he led singing while I preached in Moco Moco just 2 weeks ago. He was just elected the Tushal of his village, a gospel preacher, faithful member of the Lord's church, and he's now the leader of his village. I've been told that there is a fine line between a long sermon and a hostage situation. And I apologize for keeping you here as long as I did. But there was just some information that just had to be shared so that you could get a foundation for the work that I've been doing for many, many years. The beautiful thing about it is when I interviewed to come here to be your located preacher, the elders asked me if I was going to continue to do that work, and I said, it's a non-negotiable with me. I said, the work comes with me or I don't come. And they were overjoyed. They said, well, this is a very mission-minded congregation. They said, you will support our other works. And I said, I'm happy to support any mission work that is an effective work. I'm glad to do that, but I'm not giving up my work in Guyana. And I think you can see a little bit of why. I love the people of Guyana. I've taken close to 30 different individuals with me through the years who've been making a very big difference themselves, both stateside and in Guyana. And I'm blessed by God to have health and an opportunity to continue to do that work. And with God's blessings, I'll be going back this fall to teach the next batch of students. I was able to recruit 2 new students for the school for the new term that begins in the fall. And there are, I believe, 7 students so far signed up to begin classes for their 2-year program in the school. I hope to see some of you on the plane with me at some time in the future. I know some of you are not able to go. I pray that others of you who are able to go will see in your heart the value of this work and choose to join me in this effort. I'm grateful to the elders here for their vision and their understanding where this work is concerned. And I know they're not giving up on any of the other works for the sake of the work that I do. And I wouldn't expect them to. I would counsel them not to do that. Because it's not about my work versus another work. It's about us going into all the world to preach the gospel. Being all things to all people, if by all means we might save some. God bless you. Thank you so much for being here. I know we're about to sing our song. And then I think a couple of the elders have some remarks they want to make, and we'll be dismissed.